The primary way they've kind of measured the broader kind of ESG with really kind of taking a risk lens. It is a risk mitigation ploy, and we certainly want to impact diverse communities and have a positive impact. We certainly want to reduce the impact we're having on the environment. But ultimately, it is really the stakeholders, regulators, investors, credit agencies, your employees, whether they're the communities you're doing business in. Ultimately, it is them putting the pressure on companies to act in this ESG space.
Welcome to the Hackett Group's Business Acceleration Podcast. Week after week, you'll hear from top experts on how to avoid obstacles, manage detours, and celebrate milestones on the journey to world-class performance.
Hello and welcome to all of our listeners. My name is Vicky Cavan. I will be your host for today's episode of the Hackett Group's podcast. I will guide and facilitate the conversation and bring in some additional context as necessary. So I'm one of the advisors who works in the European procurement and P2P team. So we work with procurement leadership across a range of fantastic global brands to help them maximize the value that they get from Hackett's intellectual property. Now, a lot of that fantastic research comes from my first guest today, Amy Hillcox, who is the Senior Research Director for Procurement. My second guest is Kurt Albertson, who is a principal in our US procurement advisory practice. So thank you to you both for joining me today. So we're going to be talking about a topic which the beginning of my career, we were calling corporate social responsibility. Then we evolved to talking about sustainability, which to me feels like more of a forward-looking, longer-term description. And most commonly now, we are really talking and defining the E, S, and G elements and getting into the specifics of what sits within that environmental, social, and governance category. And Kurt, maybe before we jump into the content, just to level set for the listeners, you could give a perspective on terminology or definitions that you're using in the US at the moment.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you. Again, this is Kurt Albertson, a principal in our North American procurement practice and North American practice lead. But yeah, you know, the terminology has been a bit confusing over the years, right? But it really has coalesced around the broader topic of environmental social governance here in the US as well. Certainly, you know, ESG was a hot topic that came out 2-3 years back. Sustainability, DEI, all of those terms kind of get thrown around and kind of have a specific meaning. But I would say certainly with, and particularly with a lot of the hiring at the corporate level, at the senior level, executive level, an ESG lead, ESG, environmental social governance, really has become the go-to kind of terminology that's used here within the US as well. And then things like supplier diversity, sustainable procurement, you know, kind of align with and are components of that broader term.
Okay, good to hear that we're aligned. I think in terms of the roles, you make an interesting point. In Europe, I think we are speaking to a lot of sustainability directors or sustainability managers. So I've seen less of the ESG in the actual job titles, but certainly very common terminology. Okay, good stuff. Amy, maybe I can turn to you to tell us now a little bit about the latest study that we ran here at the Hackett Group and, you know, what we know about the elements of ESG in terms of what companies are focusing on at the moment.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Vicky. And just to carry on with the sort of terminology topic, we called our study last year our sustainable procurement study. So we took the sort of sustainability as the umbrella catch-all terminology, if you like. We're also seeing some companies talk about it in terms of responsible procurement or responsible purchasing as well. When I had a look at all of the sort of job titles when we did run the study, you would have been amazed by the wide variety of titles for people who were responsible for this ESG type of topic. So just a little bit about the study that we ran last year, our sustainable procurement study, which is available, all the content is available for our members on our member center. It is a performance study. So in the Hackett world, we run sort of two different types of research studies. We do a performance studies and we also do what we would call like a quick poll or just a survey. Now our performance studies are different because they are more in depth. So we look at sort of a wider set of questions. We also make sure that we're gathering enough data around the performance around that topic. So with a sustainable procurement one, for example, we asked questions around, you know, percentage of sustainable spend, percentage of sustainable suppliers, savings that you're seeing from that sustainability spend piece. So we ask those questions so that we have enough data. So when we do the cut, we can do a sort of a top performer versus peer cut of the data. So you get a view of not only, you know, what's going on, but then we show you, okay, those who are top performers in this area, this is what they're actually doing. So rather than just giving you the weather report saying, hey, it's sunny outside, we're able to give you more information under what's happening and helping you to understand. So with this study, we really focused on practices and how practices are being deployed in our procurement teams around sustainability. And coming out of the back end of this, because it was more in depth, we had three different reports available for our members, one around key practices, one around sort of that supplier evaluation qualification piece, and then one around reporting, including some content on greenhouse gas reporting, which is really topical at the moment for a lot of our members. So that's a little bit about the study. So it was very in-depth, a lot of great information. And, you know, coming back to this sort of question of what do we call it, the other question that we did ask sort of at the beginning of the study was, in your sustainability program, what do you consider to be fitting within that bucket, if that makes sense? So we asked around the sort of the E, the S, and the G elements, so environmental, social, and governance, what elements do you actually include in your sustainable procurement program? And we're at a point now where about 90% roughly of organizations are including all three elements. Now, this has been actually quite a big uptick on the environmental piece. When we ran this study about 2 to 3 years ago, environmental was really lagging behind the other areas. It was about 10 percentage points lower than all the other areas when we ran the study 2 years ago. So we're actually seeing a big shift, if you like, in terms of that focus that people are placing on the environmental aspect and making sure that's included in their sustainability or ESG programs.
Thanks, Amy. That's really interesting to hear. Can you also tell us a little bit about what the participants told us about the objectives of their programs and initiatives that they have in place?
Yeah, and this is when we do a study, we will ask about objectives, because if you kind of think about it, if you're going to go out and set up a program of any type within your procurement space, sustainability, supplier diversity, supplier relationship management, you always have to start with the objective. So what are we actually trying to achieve here? And we've already talked about, you know, the sort of broad scope, if you like, that you could potentially be including within your ESG program or your sustainability program. So we did ask this question, and we asked it through two different lenses. So we said, okay, what are your corporate ESG objectives? So what are you trying to achieve at a corporate level? And then we asked it from your actual procurement organization level. So within your procurement organization, what are your objectives? What are you trying to achieve? If you look at the list, what's actually interesting is that two elements, so compliance with regulations and risk management, or reducing your sort of risk exposure, were both in the top three for both the corporate and the procurement objectives. What I find interesting about this is there's actually, you know, they're quite well aligned. Usually we don't see such close alignment between corporate and procurement, which is really good to see, because that's sort of the key for making progress in any type of initiative. If you're trying to set up a procurement sustainability program or ESG program, but you're not linked to what corporate's doing, you kind of are trying to run a procurement or initiative in a vacuum and hoping for the best. So seeing that alignment is a really great thing to see. Now, the other thing that I found interesting, if you look at the procurement objectives, the third element in the top three was emission reductions, which really tracks with, I think, what we're seeing from some of our members and some of the questions we're getting around, how do we track the emissions from our suppliers? How do we do that greenhouse gas reporting piece of the puzzle? And how do we do it effectively? And this is an area, I think, where there's still some convergence in terms of being able to standardize and there being sort of just a standard approach that everybody uses. And then the other thing that was interesting in the corporate list is their sort of other element in the top three that wasn't in the procurement list was improved brand value. And this, I think, is something that has changed over the last 5 or 10 years. And I think it's something that in some ways is a reflection of the demographic change that we're seeing. I think if you were to talk to somebody in my generation, I won't tell you what generation I'm in, I didn't grow up with that sort of awareness of the environmental issues of climate change, but I think it's changing as you move down sort of that demographic spectrum. I know with my kids, it's always top of mind. So I think there's some change in that. We're starting to see that sort of change in culture, if you like, being reflected through into corporate objectives, which is fantastic because that's an important lever for moving the sort of sustainability ESG agenda forward in the future.
Thanks, Amy. That's really interesting. And two things sprung to mind as you were talking. Firstly, that alignment piece. I know that the data showed this significant increase that you mentioned, that the data also supported that in terms of the alignment between the corporate and the procurement level strategies. And I think it's fair to say that that is one of the critical success factors. And the other piece I was thinking about the objectives is it's almost less important what the objective is, but being crystal clear on that objective is a really fundamental step in setting that path forwards and driving real change.
Yeah, I was just going to say, absolutely, I agree with that, Vicky. And that objectives piece, you know, I've had lots of conversations with clients where they'll kind of say, oh, well, what should I have in my sustainability policy? And then the first question I always ask them is, well, what is your objective for your sustainable procurement program? And if they can't answer that question, then you can't move forward, because how do you design your supplier code of conduct? How do you design your policies? How do you change, you know, sort of what you're doing from your category management, your sourcing perspective, your reporting perspectives? You can't answer that first question, which is, what are you trying to achieve?
Yeah, makes sense. Thank you. Kurt, maybe we could turn over to you now and just ask for your perspective in terms of what you've heard Amy say, whether that reflects the conversations that you're also having with clients. Part one and part two of my question for you, how would you advise us as procurement practitioners to then get our suppliers on board and get them aligned with the objectives that we've set out?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, different companies are at different positions, right? If you think about the broader, you know, ESG topic as it relates to procurement, it's really been around, you know, sustainable procurement and supplier diversity. Those are kind of the two areas. So, you know, and different companies are emphasizing either both, and they've even combined those in some companies into kind of a single role within procurement to support, or they're emphasizing one more than the other. But in general, those are the two components of ESG that procurement is paying most attention to. You know, when it comes to, and you know, even some of the recent data that we just are about to release from a study that we just recently did and that Amy and I collaborated on, if you think about, I mean, supplier diversity is pretty straightforward, right? It's typically the percent of spend with diverse suppliers as the way that companies, you know, kind of look at, you know, the success of those programs, even though, you know, for years there's been conversation, certainly within Hackett with our client base as well, just in the market, of whether or not that really aligns with the true objectives of supplier diversity, which is to, you know, improve the have an economic impact on the targeted diversity groups. And if you're just looking at percent of spend with diverse suppliers, well, typically, a lot of companies are able to achieve that with a couple of suppliers where they spend a lot. So there are a broader set of metrics that companies are starting to look at, like percentage of suppliers, as an example, which tends to spread the wealth around a little bit, impact on, you know, the demographic community that they're targeting, so on and so forth. But still far and away, the companies are looking at percent of spend with diverse suppliers. If you look at the broader kind of sustainability kind of topic, certainly CO2 is something that's gaining traction, right? Emissions, and you're starting to see kind of the third-party solutions actually provide some input into this by providing data on this But, you know, it's still fairly immature out there, but attempting to provide kind of the emissions amounts associated with the delivery of a product or service. So companies are starting to measure that, but the primary way they've kind of measured the broader kind of ESG, with the exception of supplier diversity topics, is really kind of taking a risk lens associated with it, right? And ultimately, you know, when you think about this topic of ESG, you know, I always like to kind of position that it is a risk mitigation ploy, right? I mean, it's, you know, you hear people say, well, we're doing it because it's the right thing to do. Yeah, I don't think anybody disagrees with that. I mean, we certainly want to impact diverse communities and have a positive impact on that. We certainly want to reduce, you know, the impact we're having on the environment. But ultimately, it is really the stakeholders that are out there, whether they are regulators, whether they are investors, whether they are credit agencies, whether they are employees, whether the communities you're doing business in. Ultimately, it is them putting the pressure on companies to act in this ESG space, and specifically for procurement around sustainable procurement and supplier diversity. And if you're not, it poses a risk to the company, right? You know, investment will go elsewhere, and that can have a fundamental impact on your market cap. Employees will go elsewhere. That can have a fundamental impact on your ability to deliver. Communities in which you're located are not going to be happy, and that's going to cause problems. Credit agencies are going to take this into account and reduce your credit scores, and that's going to have obviously impact on your business. So ultimately, it really is the stakeholder community, and there are multiple stakeholders that are driving these agendas for most corporations on the broader ESG topic and sustainable procurement and supplier diversity. And that's why when you look at kind of how companies tend to view and success in this and measure what they're doing, it is based on a risk segmentation approach. And some of the things they're looking at is, okay, what percentage of our suppliers potentially have, you know, are the biggest impact on this risk that we have? So if you're talking about sustainable procurement, for example, it's your suppliers that have the biggest emissions output, right? So those are the ones we need to be managing and have plans in place for. And that kind of leads into your second question, right, around how do we align with our suppliers? And that's really where the emphasis is, particularly, I mean, supplier diversity efforts have been around for many, many, many years here in North America, and I know they're gaining traction around the globe. So there certainly has been, and you're seeing more, and you've seen requirements in the past with, hey, you know, we want to see, for our tier one suppliers, we want evidence of the fact that you're working with your tier two suppliers are diverse. And, you know, the automotive industry, for example, has long had kind of some requirements around that and very specifics. It's really the sustainable procurement space that's a little more new here, particularly in North America, and where companies are really focused trying to, you know, the first efforts were really around type one, type two emissions, which are really internal to the company. But now it's type three emissions, right? The supply chain emissions, and how do we align our suppliers and craft a supply base that is not only meeting our all other objectives, but is also sustainable. And that's really where the focus is, particularly here in North America, with respect to how do we get them aligned. And again, it's through a risk lens, as I talked about before. And, you know, that small percentage of suppliers that pose the biggest risks to our sustainable procurement objectives or our mission objectives are the ones that we are going to really focus 90% of our effort on. And that's what you're seeing, right? For those suppliers, we're seeing companies starting, you know, asking for what those companies are doing to reduce their carbon footprint, starting to set goals and targets with them, and in many cases, actually collaborating with them to help them, you know, achieve those objectives. The tier below that, kind of the medium risk suppliers, you know, maybe not having formal requirements or targets, but certainly kind of encouraging, you know, them to drive reductions, maybe giving them some tools such as assessment tools that they can use to kind of assess their internal opportunities for emissions reductions, having them maybe set their own targets and drive for that. And then the third kind of low risk suppliers, it's really just about encouragement, right? And then obviously, from an audit perspective and embedding information into, you know, contracts and requirements, it follows again that tiering of risk. So it really is kind of the classic risk assessment when it comes to sustainability within your supply base and applying the appropriate level of effort where you're going to have the biggest impact or which poses the biggest risk to you as a company.
So do you see that companies are focusing on the biggest spend suppliers, or are they taking this from a category specific angle?
Yeah, I mean, that's the classic, I'm not going to say mistake, but that's the classic approach, right? We look at whether we're looking at it from, hey, a broader supplier relationship management program, to which, you know, a lot of these programs for sustainable procurement kind of fit under. I mean, the classic approach is we tend to look at the percentage of spend. You know, procurement's all about spend and how much spend we have with these suppliers to ultimately kind of identify which ones are going to be in that top tier. It really needs to be a more thorough review of your suppliers. I mean, spend certainly is a guidepost and a pretty good one, at least to kind of initially shine light on which suppliers we want to focus. But ultimately, it's, you know, there certainly is probably a high correlation with the suppliers you spend the most on, and also the impact you're going to be able to have on them, right? Because that's something we need to think about. You can have a high CO2 emitting supplier that you're working with, but if you're only spending, you know, $20,000 a year with them, they're probably not going to take a lot of direction from you when it comes to trying to drive their emissions reductions. But then again, you could have a supplier that you spend a lot with that really just isn't a big emissions generator. So why spend your time there? So it really does need to be more of a balanced approach looking at, yeah, the size of spend, because those are the ones you're generally going to have more influence over, but also which ones are going to help you meet your objectives for the program, which is ultimately emissions reduction. So certainly segmenting suppliers by those that are the highest emitters.
Makes sense. Thanks, Kurt. And I think what's quite interesting is, as we've talked today, some of the topics or activities are one-offs or setup activities, you know, whether it's scope, objectives, and baselining and tiering those suppliers. But ultimately, we do need to build ESG to become a part of everything that we do in procurement. So Amy, I wonder if I could turn to you, what advice would you give to companies who are planning out now how to embed ESG throughout their procurement processes?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think this is, after you've gotten through that initial setup, I think this is the stumbling block that some organizations will face, which is, you know, how do we take sustainable procurement or ESG and make sure that it's permeating through our day-to-day ways of working. So if you kind of think about, you know, some of the things that you should probably start thinking through. So let's start at the start of the process, at least in my mind, which is that category management piece, which is really, you know, the planning and oversight that you're doing for your different spend categories. And if you're looking at category management, and you need to start building your sustainability or your ESG elements into your category management processes. So this is things about, well, do we understand what our stakeholders' objectives are for sustainability or ESG? If we understand that, do we have the correct supplier capabilities in place to address that today? Or do we need to go out and find new suppliers with new capabilities to help support those objectives? Have we built sustainability or ESG initiatives into our category plans? So our plan of activities for the upcoming year or the next 3 to 5 years, do we have the right activities in there to support this? Are we including these elements in our reporting? Do we have the right skills within our category team? So do we need to bring in skills from other parts of the business so that we can support this activity and embed that in what we're doing from day to day? Then if you sort of move on to that sourcing process, you know, how do we start building it into the sourcing? So first thing is, how do we identify these suppliers? If I need to include an ESG sustainable qualified supplier in my tender process, can I easily go into our existing tools, pull that information out? Are we able to do that? So if you kind of think about embedding that, making it as easy as possible for people to access that information at the beginning of the sourcing process, is critical. But then you also need to think about, as you go through that sourcing process, so what new policy elements might we need in there? So are we going to have a requirement that you have to include a qualified, an ESG sustainability qualified supplier in the process? When we evaluate, are there rules around the evaluation criteria and what gets included? And how firm do you want to be? So I've heard about some companies who kind of take the view of, when we tender, we're going to include a supplier that has the sort of sustainability credentials that we need. When we get to the end of the process, when we evaluate them, all else being the same, so the, you know, the costing and all the other elements of the commercial deal come in the same across the supply base, then, or the suppliers have been included in that tender process, then we're going to select the one that is qualified from a sustainability perspective. So that's sort of a light enforcement of a policy versus other organizations where you might say, you know what, we have to have a sustainable supplier and that gets selected. So you need to be clear on what the policy is and how you're going to implement it, how sort of firm you're going to be with that, because that will have an impact on how quickly you meet some of your objectives. And then the other thing you need to think about is having the capability to do some of that supply market research as part of that tendering process. So can you go out and, when you're doing your supply market research, identify the new suppliers, the new supplier capabilities? So you might have existing suppliers who have changed their capabilities. How you can do that supply market research so that you know what's going on in your market in terms of technology changes, but also the capabilities that your suppliers in your market have. So as you start thinking about, how do I actually bring it to life, make it work, think about your core sort of procurement processes, and then where do you build in the sustainability elements, and how strict are you, if you like, with those elements? And that's going to help you to drive it forward. And also making it as easy as possible for people within your organization to be compliant and to meet the objectives that you're trying to achieve.
The point that you made about the RFP evaluation really, really resonated with me from conversations I've had with clients. I know on one roundtable, we went through the discussion of, you know, should we allocate a percentage in our scoring template? If we want to allocate a percentage, what percentage should that be? And an interesting perspective came back from one company who said, no, we will not have a percentage, because that implies that it could still be, say, balanced out by cost or other value adds. We have to get in the mindset that this becomes a prerequisite for working with us, not a factor to balance in, which I thought was quite interesting. Kurt, anything you'd like to add on what Amy's just told us?
No, I think Amy was pretty thorough. I mean, it just aligns with kind of what I've said, right? It's, you know, it really is about kind of segmenting your suppliers, understanding where you're going to apply the most effort, particularly from an audit and investment of time perspective. But you know, I think Amy covered it pretty well.
Well, then I guess last question for you, and it probably wouldn't be a Hackett Group podcast if we didn't discuss digital transformation in some way. So maybe I could ask you to share some perspectives around tools and technologies that are currently or are going to be needed to support these programs.
Yeah, and again, I'll kind of break it into two buckets. Again, the supplier diversity space, which again has been a, you know, big focus for a very long time here in North America. For them, it's in that space, it's really about, you know, obviously tagging suppliers with diversity status and you know, ensuring certificates are up to date. That kind of insights from, you know, third party analytical providers, right? And there certainly are, you know, companies out there. I'm not going to go and mention any by name, but there are certainly, you know, providers out there in this space that have, you know, mature solutions in that space. Whether you're kind of just turning over your database and their of suppliers and they're tagging them with their diversity status and certificate, you know, up to date or not, or if it's done more real time. But, you know, where you're seeing that is certainly starting to see, and this is true also, which I'll talk a little bit about on the sustainability side, you're starting to see the supplier diversity kind of information being shared and identified in the, you know, it used to be just, okay, we want to run a report and we want to calculate, you know, percent of spend with diverse suppliers. But now it's made its way into kind of the buying process, right? So you're giving visibility to that for your requesters so that your requesters can, you know, make decisions based on certainly price, but also other factors like supplier diversity status. So they actually see that when they are making the purchase. So that's where you're seeing that integrated into some of these buying platforms. And obviously they're leveraging kind of third-party data providers to enrich their offerings to support this. And also on the supplier, you know, the supplier discovery space, right? That's, you know, every supplier diversity study we've ever done kind of indicates, boy, it would be great if we had a magic wand to go and identify diverse suppliers in some of these hard to find categories. So supplier discovery tools and helping kind of identify databases to help identify suppliers is another big focus. You know, kind of switching the sustainability side, you know, that's a little more difficult, right? Because what we're ultimately trying to understand is, and in general, as we talked about, the general view of, you know, sustainable procurement is emissions, carbon emissions, and the friendliness of a supplier to that objective. You know, the calculation of that obviously becomes a bit more complex, right? And there are certainly a lot of solutions that are out there in the market to try to make those calculations and assign some type of carbon emission footprint score to a product or service or supplier that you're doing business with. But obviously, there's a lot of factors that go into that, and those calculations aren't yet standardized, and how we report those aren't, although there's effort to kind of move in that direction in terms of the standardization. But it's a ways off, right? So the other thing, obviously, you see is, you know, some of the certifying bodies out there that, you know, will do a sustainability assessment and classification of a supplier. Again, I'm not going to name any of them, but there's a number of them out there, particularly one that's pretty large in the business. That will, you know, they basically do certifications on a supplier about their sustainability practices, right? And it's broader than just carbon emissions, right? It looks at, you know, they have methodologies, and each of the ones has a bit of a different methodology when it comes to the broader ESG topic. And some will focus on maybe the social aspect more than the environmental, others, you know, vice versa. So interesting enough, there's been some criticism in the market with some of those third-party kind of certifying organizations that, you know, they'll go and you get two of them certifying the same company and they have completely different results. And ultimately, what it comes down to is their methodologies aren't standardized and they're emphasizing different components of that broader ESG topic when they go in and do the assessment of that particular company. So, you know, that's all evolving, and hopefully, you know, I think you're going to see regulators continue to kind of drive some standardization with respect to reporting, because right now, as probably most of us know, you know, you hear like some of these very high level executives for very big companies coming out and say, we want to be carbon neutral by X and X a date, usually just past when they plan to retire. What does that really mean? Well, I mean, it can kind of mean whatever they want it to mean right now. But in the future, you're going to see, you know, some of the regulators and the industry itself put more definition around some of those statements in terms of what it actually means.
Fantastic. Thank you, Kurt. Well, thank you to both of you for joining me today. It's been a pleasure, and I hope we can catch up on this topic again soon, because it is something that is moving at quite a pace. Thank you to our listeners also. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please do like it and share it and subscribe.
Thanks for listening. You can find the audio, helpful resources, and a transcript of each episode at podcast.thehackitgroup.com. If you liked this episode, please share it. You can also subscribe at Apple Podcasts or your favorite listening app so you never miss an episode. We'd welcome your feedback by tapping the rating on this or any episode, or send us an email at podcast@thehackitgroup.com. The Hackett Group is a global leader in defining and enabling world-class performance. Learn how we can assist with your improvement journey at www.thehackitgroup.com.